welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Blubbin' the Bloom, episode 107. Going to wrap up our starting pitching previews for the 2024 fantasy baseball season, talking ADPs, about 175 to 400 starting pitchers. We'll cover them all for you, at least the ones that matter, so most of them, and much, much more to get you ready for the season. You can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at Ryan BHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
Fantastic, man. This is the time. Super Bowl's done. So we got that out of the way. We're gonna wrap up our position previews this week. We've got this time next week. I'll be drafting my labor team.
It'll be done.
We've got the labor mix live stream next Tuesday, February 20th.
My favorite show of the year, because I have to do nothing but drink and
heckle. You just drink high noons and make fun of my picks. So
best show of the year.
But then in 3 weeks, and this was official today, Tout Wars announced it. You can't do that because we are in the same Tout Wars mix league, and we're going to stream that puppy on March 5th, Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, live as well as part of the show. So that's going to be crazy. We've got our auction leagues starting up. So I'm starting prep for my first one, which is February 19th. So, yeah, Monday. Man, there's just like all kinds of stuff going on, and it would not have it any other way.
Yep. It is a glorious time of the year. I'm doing my last draft champions right now with our buddies, Ben Tidd, Mike Curlin, and others. And that's been fun to see that kind of unfold. I'm looking forward to the auction leagues. Like you mentioned, you're going to kick yours off on Monday. Then I have one next Friday and the following Monday. And then you have one the following Friday, I think it is. And that'll be our four leagues, which if you missed my tweet about it, thank you all. You filled four of them up. 56 of you listeners rated and reviewed the show, and you're in one of the draft with me or Ryan. We're each in two. And if you missed it, I announced the overall prize, which is an autographed jersey of a player of your choice, an active player, I said. It'd be really cool if it was a player that was on your winning overall team. So that'd be cool as well. So thank you all. It's pretty awesome to have you guys supporting the show, and that's why I wanted to give back to you and hook it up. And in year one, you know, special because it's year one to see where this puppy can go. So it's pretty cool.
We're gonna dub you all who joined the leagues the 56, because there's 60 of us, but we're four of the leagues, and you will always be, you know, put it on your resume, your tombstone,
Twitter profile,
you know, whatever. You'll always be that inaugural class of the 56.
Yeah, so pretty cool stuff. Thank you all for doing that. And the bright side is, if you don't like our leagues or you're getting annoyed by us talking about it, we're done promoting it. So we're good. Thanks to you all.
We probably will do like a recap just of our like experience in auction strategy and stuff like that. We probably won't go into our teams because who cares? But I think once we're done with the four leagues, we'll do a little like not a full episode on it, but just a little auction. I don't know. Debrief.
Recap.
Recap. Yeah. That's an easy word.
There you go. So that'll be fun. And we'll get you guys kicking. Like we said before, previews in this week. Labor's next Tuesday. Pockets of ADP coming up. I'm so pumped on that. Right. Like we've said it before, but I'm really looking forward to that. It's really fun stuff here. I've been like writing articles about certain categories where you can find players and stuff. We're going to incorporate that even more with the pockets and really get a feel for things. So getting pumped for that, because I can use all of that knowledge to school Ryan and Tout Wars. It's going to be absolutely amazing on March 5th. And the fact you said I couldn't drink while I draft, challenge accepted. on that one. So
you're the Tout Wars rookie here, at least to this league.
In that league, like, let's not go.
FYI, it is an OBP league. So yes. I'll give you that. I'll give you that little that nugget. I won't reveal any other league secrets.
Yep.
That's gonna be fun. Tout Wars. They tweeted it out. I don't know if the tweet is in like draft order. If it is, we're two picks apart.
I don't think it's in draft order.
I hope not. I hope we're a little separated, but if not, whatever.
Even better. Snipe City, baby. Snipe City. Keep your questions coming in the chat. Aloha to you as well, Kevin Hastings. Thanks for joining us. He is in the leagues with us and the On the Wire podcast, so go check that out. And then Daniela, we see your question. We will get to that at the end in the questions section. So keep them coming, folks. We appreciate you if you're joining us live on YouTube or X. That is awesome. But let's get crack-a-lacking at it. Again, like we did on the outfield part three. We'll do them in pockets of five. We'll hit on our most like our favorite one in the group, or give maybe a couple little snippets on people we like. We'll breeze through this. We got about, I think it's, was there 60 on this page or 30 on this page? About 60 we're going to go through for you guys before we get to listener questions. So should be a fun one. Ryan, let's kick it off. ADP 175 through 194. Yeah, Brian Wu, Braxton Garrett, Bryce Miller, Christian Javier, Ryan Pepio. Who you liking here?
Gotta go Seattle, man. Yep. When in doubt, go with the Mariners rotation. I'm going to go Brian Wu out of this group. Wu is actually one of the few like in this tier. And actually I'll kind of a little bit go off on a just a general strategy thing. Just for me, what we've got on the board for the YouTube crowd for the live stream, we've got like pitchers, 45 through 60 on the left side and then 60 through 75 on the right side. There's a lot more pitchers I like on the right side on 60 through 75. And as we'll see, as we go through this kind of first group, these first sets of groups, there are not many pitchers that I personally am that high on. And so what does that mean, at least for me and for just from like a, not really me, but just when you guys are preparing for your drafts, it's good. It's valuable information to know that. So like, I know that if there's a bunch of pitchers that I'm not really that high on in this group, I'm going to look over on the hitting side and probably target a Michael Garcia, Starling Marte, who we've talked about, Brandon Drury, who we've talked about, bats going in this range. Stock up there. Also stock up on pitchers before this group. In the last episode, there were a bunch of guys that we were high on. So it's just like an example of taking not only just player by player by player and analyzing that, but taking that kind of macro view and saying, okay, this is a spot in the draft where I like or don't like certain positions or whatever. You guys may like a bunch of pitchers in this group and your strategy may be different, but that's kind of what I'm thinking so far, at least in at least for straight drafts. So to go back to your actual question, big fan of Brian Wu. He pops. So earlier today I put a Bloom board out that looks at like the three different types of strikes. We had an episode about this sometime last year, but there's like the golden goose, the swinging strike, and then there's called plus swinging CSW, and then there's just strikes. And so I did a board. There's like 23, 24 pitchers that are above average in all three, and Brian Wu is one of those guys going at an ADP of 177. So I like the fact that he can get whiffs, that he can throw strikes. Kind of alluded to this. We had a listener question last week of like, tell us something wrong with Brian Wu. And I said, well, lefties hit him kind of hard. I dug into it a little bit more, and Wu started throwing a cutter late in the season against lefties, threw it over 20% of the time in August and September, and had a lot more success with that cutter going against lefties. So it's just an example, like tiny sample, but it's just an example of Brian Wu adjusting and improving, and probably, you know, Seattle's organization giving him that tip off to, hey, try this cutter more against lefties. So, I think the last thing I'll say about Brian Wu, as I've been talking for like 5 minutes, is the health. That's probably the biggest downside with Wu. Like, had 132 innings last year. Can he get up to like 150, 160? I think that's reasonable. And again, in this starting pitcher environment, I don't think that's that far off from your more volume guys. So Brian Wu's the pick for me here.
Yep. Love Brian Wu. That's totally one I could have gone with, so I won't say anything else that except I hashtag support that as well. So go with the Brian Wu. I will mention though that I do like Braxton Garrett and Bryce Miller here as well. Like, this is a range that I don't mind dipping my toes in. I know we're not doing underdog per se, but even Brendan Tuma tweeted out like a screenshot the other day, like Wu and Miller and Garrett, they go so late in drafts. If you need like one of your last few pitchers in your dingers and stuff, these are great ones in my opinion, because you mentioned Wu, he should get 150 to 160. I wouldn't be shocked. Bryce Miller's in a similar boat. We saw 131 with him. If you throw his AA innings in there, he threw about 150 innings last year. Like, he's stretched out. He's good to go, which is harder to find, obviously, as you go deeper into drafts. So I love these guys. Bryce Miller, obviously, if you follow anything on Twitter, working on that splitter, he shows videos of it all the time. That could still be a, you know, iffy thing, trying to incorporate a splitter. But you've mentioned it with George Kirby and other things in Seattle. Like, if that's something that comes into fruition, that's tremendous with Bryce Miller, and it could help him take the next step, because his first half, second half, a lot more, you know, higher ERA, things weren't like as dominant in the second half for Bryce Miller. but that just means maybe it's, you know, the young kid getting deeper into the season. A lot of things can be taken into place that I'm not ready to give up on a talent like Bryce Miller just yet. So I think there's definitely something there. And then Braxton Garrett, you set the highest pick on him last year. So this is kind of one of your boys, but awesome season. We saw him pitch really, really, really well. Then he had this like blister issue and kind of didn't really, he struggled for like a month, it felt like, but then got healthy again, finished the year strong. Love Braxton Garrett, threw a ton of innings. He could maybe take a Lizardo bounce potentially, not to that level, but there's the skill sets there with Braxton Garrett. And one thing we've talked about a lot, at least I know I have, I love guys that can strike guys out. Braxton Garrett can do that. The projections he's having for 153 and 157 innings pitched. When you look at Garrett this past year, he had 156 strikeouts in 159 innings, and he had a 23.7% K rate, 19.3% K to walk. Those are things we like to see, Mr. Bloomfield. So Braxton Garrett's a dude I like as well.
Also like to see Garrett's forecaster upside of a 315 ERA, 200 Ks. It's all about the stamina. Will he fall? Will he break apart again in the second half next year? But tons of talent.
Yep, for sure. All right, the next grouping here from ADP 196 to 203, Shane Baz, Yu Darvish, Shoto Imanaga, Aaron Savali, and Eduardo Rodriguez. Another kind of interesting range depending on what you're looking for on draft day, I'd say. So what do you like here?
Yeah, this is what I was kind of going at before. I'm not feeling really any of these five guys. But it is interesting in that, like, you've got, I think, a quote unquote safer option in E-Rod, like a pretty high floor guy, but probably not the highest ceiling. You've got Darvish. You want to talk about floor and ceiling. Yep. But Yu Darvish is entering his age 37 season. You've got Shane Baz, who report came out today. I forget which Tampa Bay beat writer said it, but Tampa is going to slow play Baz in the beginning of the season. So I can't, that especially really in a 15 team.
Surprise to anybody.
Like, yeah, and given the injuries, like, that should not be a surprise, but it was good to see that confirmed. And so, like, if you're drafting Boz, it's almost like drafting and then holding on, wasting a roster spot on an injured guy at the beginning of the year, and that to me isn't very ideal. So I don't know. None of these guys, honestly, I talked a little bit about Savali last week. That combination of low Ks and low innings, like, doesn't excite me all that much. I think if I had to pick one, I'd go E-Rod just to get some innings. But I don't know who am I missing, like, way off on any of these guys? Or
I've always been team E-Rod. It's, can the whip stay in place for you? But A, you're not paying a premium for him right here, which I'm a fan of, and B, we saw the whip actually pitch pretty well last year. We saw a pretty solid whip year for E-Rod, because in the past Toby would make fun of me, like, you just pencil in like 1.2 1.25. That was E-Rod in a nutshell every start, and every Monday night we record, he'd laugh at me because that was his whip almost every single week. We saw improvements on that this last year, so we'll see how he does in Arizona, but I have zero problems with E-Rod. Lots of shares throughout different formats already of him. People will point to Savali because we saw huge improvements when he went to, like, the pitch mix changes in Tampa Bay. I just wonder, can the strikeouts come with Savali? Because he feels like he's more of a kind of just floor dude that doesn't have a ceiling with him, and that's what's tricky about Savali. Shota Imanaga is the interesting one. First, I thought his ADP would be higher just because of name value, hype train, all that stuff. Thought it would be higher. Electric in the WBC. We have a listener question on him. Yeah. I'm curious about Imanaga. The one question I have for you, Bloomfield, you mentioned Yu Darvish. And yes, we saw 136 innings last year out of him because he battled injuries. But he still threw 24 starts, still, you know, went deep into games when he pitched. Like, he usually gave you 5, 6, 7 innings. And the strikeouts were there. So, yeah, the ratios are a little higher than the person I'm going to mention. But what's the difference? And I know you're not really in on this guy anyways, but what's the difference in Justin Verlander and Yu Darvish? And you can get Darvish a lot later. Darvish strikes out more too, by the way.
Yeah, no, that's a fair comparison. I think I'm probably out on both, but I think I'd take Darvish at the price. Yeah,
so would I. That's kind of where I'm at on that one.
Pains me to accept your Aaron Savali's slander, but
not really slander as much as I want to, like,
legend.
I want to kind of just bring people back a little bit on him. Like, I think he's really good, but between just, there's a hype train on him. You know, the whole, he went on Pollock's show and it was a really cool thing, and all these, like, there's, people are really in on what they saw in that turn to Tampa Bay, and it was good. It was very good. Don't get me wrong, but that's something we can expect Savali to sustain a full season. that's tough. But, you know, people said the same about Zach Eflin last year, and he did. So anything's possible, but I think Zach Eflin's a much better pitcher than Savali also. So pick your poisons there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see a 25% strikeout rate. I don't see a league average swinging strike rate, and I don't see a single season in the last 5 years exactly. for Savali with over 140 innings. So it's just like...
Exactly. That's the tricky part. So, like, I liked Savali, I think, before the hype train kicked in when we were doing, like, really early drafts, Ryan. I feel like he was more like 250 farther down. That was fun. That was something we could work with. Now you're getting up to this 200 range, like where you have E-Rod and company, a little trickier, to say the least.
Yep.
All right, next pocket here we have from 209 to 235. Your boy, Nathan, not Nate,
Eovaldi. Former boy. Come on, he's in the Savali crowd. It's funny these guys are right two picks apart because they're both like, they're both in the, they both have rafters in the Bloom Dome.
Yeah, it's true. Yes, they
but,
do.
But not for this year. But anyway, continue. My bad.
Brandon Fott, Lucas Giolito, Brian Bello, and Reed Detmers. This is another pocket of like former boys right here. This is a this is like
there's some of your boys in here.
This is a tough one for me. And this that God, this is gonna be like pull from the heartstrings here in a minute. So I'll let you go first.
No, it's tough. Like, you know, if all these gonna break down the second half, it just happens. The injuries catch up to him. This is what happened last year with Eovaldi. So you could make the case that at pick 209, you get what you can from him in the first half. Cause he, I mean, the postseason looked really good. Velocity was looking good. So you can make that case. Everyone else in this tier projected for north of a 425 ERA, most of them north of a 130 whip, like not that great. I would go Brandon Fott, but I think everyone is probably going to say Brandon Fott. You may say Brian Bello in addition, just knowing you. But of this group, I would gamble on Fott. But I'm, again, not high on really any of these five, which, to go back to what I said at the top, it's good to know that because I'm going to be targeting bats here. I just, if I had to pick one, I'd pick Fott for the ceiling and some of the pitch mix changes, what we saw from Fott, not just in the postseason, but when he came back from AAA the last time, looked really good. I'm not like super enthused. And these are still picks where you need production. This is not that late in the draft, 211. So,
yeah, it's hard to disagree with anything you said there. But again, I'm taking the gamble on Fott this year.
Yeah.
Just because, like, the improvements we saw, he's got that what everyone loves to hear, prospect pedigree. Everybody loves. There's some very, very smart people in the prospect game that kept saying, keep taking your chance on him. He's very good. He's very good. And he finally started clicking late in the season, into the postseason, threw over 150 innings. That's something, as you get later in these drafts, guys that throw innings is very hard. It's getting harder and harder to find, basically. So Fott is stretched out. He's young. And that gives him the ability to obviously take another step, is what I'm kind of hoping for. Another reason why I like Brian Bello. Same thing. Like, we saw the ups and downs with Bello. He still threw over 160 innings last year between the minors and the bigs. Strikeout rate's more to be more desirable. Fott's more of a strikeout guy than Brian Bello, so you got that going for you. I like them both. Lastly, I will mention the guy that brings everybody in is Reed Detmers. We saw those improvements, but then we like it's a roller coaster. I guess perfect. He's right next to Lucas Giolito. Like, I guess like a great comp between the two because we saw both of those guys. With the strikeout ability, like Lucas is even projected for 175 strikeouts. That's a lot as we get deeper into here. That's a big bump. But Detmers, we saw some just elite pitching towards the end of the season that is tempting. But it's the very, very volatile range right here.
Yeah, and maybe I'm not looking month-to-month with Detmers, but I'll push back a little on how he finished. He finished pretty bad, dude.
Now, the last few starts were rough, like horrifically rough.
First to second half for Detmers last year, the K rate dropped 8 points from 30, which is great, down to 22, which is average. Velocity was down a full tick. Swinging strike rate dropped 3 points from like 14 to 11, which is below average. Like, not a lot. Not, I repeat myself a lot, but like not a lot. I'm big on finishing strong or finishing not strong. And Detmers was certainly in that not strong category. I will say the best skill, the best individual skill of anyone in this group, Eovaldi, Fott, Giolito, Bello, and Detmers, is Brian Bello's ground ball rate. Like, that guy can get some ground balls, 56% last year. I kind of see some like Framber Valdez Marcus there, especially Stroman. If he keeps, and Stroman, like, that's if he keeps developing that changeup, I think there's some strikeout upside too. So, like, Bello's not a bad pick here either. But
yeah, but Bayo's got that if he can just get some more strikeouts, which I was hoping for last year, but the way they brought him back, and he's one of those that came on a bloom board. If you erase that first BS start on Marathon Day, Patriot Day,
he had heck of a season. Remember that one. Good Lord.
I was so pissed when they brought him back because I had so many Brian Bayo shares, and that just crippled him out the gate. I do want to say another thing about Fott for anybody that may be kind of curious on him still. You want to look, you're talking month to month with Detmers, man. If people want to look month to month with Fott, he ended with a 24% K to walk in September and October, 3.7 xFIP in September and October. Like the boy just bloomed for him in a big, big way.
And there's context behind that because it was, and I alluded to this earlier, but there was the kind of up and down with AAA, but there was some legitimate changes that Fott made to kind of drive. It wasn't just month to month variance. I think you can get caught up in month to month variance. But especially with pitchers, if there's a change, like I waited a little more heavier.
I honestly think Fott moves up quite a bit come main event season.
Yep.
I think he's the one that takes a jump. So enjoy it now, folks. All right. 237 to 248. We got Chucky, Charlie Morton, your boy, Christopher Sanchez.
Rest of the pod on Christopher Sanchez. Yes. Let's do it.
Yusei Kikuchi, Tristan McKenzie, Nick Lodolo. I'll say this much before Ryan waxes poetically about his guy. I messaged him saying, I'm sorry. You're going to start paying for him now because on the recent episode of The Craft with Nick Pollock and Eno Saris, they spent a large section talking Christopher Sanchez and how much they liked him. So you were on him before, at least I heard you before them. I'm not going to say who was first because I don't know, but I'm saying you. And now it's going to cost a little more.
These damn famous pitching analysts finding these gems. I don't know, dude. Like, honestly, a lot of people like Christopher Sanchez. A lot of people don't. But the price has stayed pretty cheap. The 238 ADP. So, like, Sanchez is my pick here. I have another really, I like Nick Lodolo a lot. So maybe we can talk about him for a little bit. But Christopher Sanchez, like, you look at what he did last year. 4% walk rate. And again, I look at to kind of justify or validate that walk rate, I look at underlying the ball percentage. League average on that is 36%. Christopher Sanchez was at 33%, which is really, really good and reinforces maybe not a 4% walk rate. Like that's really good and hard to sustain over time. But the control looks really good for Christopher Sanchez. Gets a ton of ground balls. I just mentioned Brian Bayo's 56% ground ball rate. Sanchez is at 57, and he gets ground balls with every single pitch. Those sinker, changeup, slider, all over 50% ground ball rate. The changeup, which Christopher Sanchez threw more and more, and this is probably the biggest reason I like him, the changeup usage ticked up pretty much every month for Sanchez last season, was by far his best pitch. 23% swinging strike, just elite, and a 71% ground ball rate. Like that's one of the better pitches in baseball. It's one of the better pitches in baseball, and Sanchez threw it 33% of the time last year. So for all of those reasons, I'm big on Christopher Sanchez. The to kind of both sides this thing, the biggest cons to him are the track record sucks. Like, look at Christopher Sanchez's minor league numbers, not great, and the schedule kind of sucked in the second half. So you could make the argument he did this against bad teams, but these are still major league hitters, man. Christopher Sanchez is my favorite starting pitcher pick in 2024 draft pool.
And Tariq Skubal did it against bad teams too, and no one seems to care, so you're okay. Eric Halterman says 110% in on Sanchez's skills, but every free agent starter gets linked with Philly. This is true, but the goal is with every free agent starter linked, it means Taiwan Walker is leaving town. That's usually the plan there, hopefully. So we'll see.
Hopefully. I'd be surprised if Sanchez got booted from the rotation.
Uncle Ted has a question for you. Sanchez being so accurate, yet his whip being high is scary.
Yeah, that smells like a very high BABIP, but no. He had a 105 whip last year. Uncle Ted, what are we looking at?
Well, he's got a Unabomber avatar, so you never know with Uncle Ted. for me, if it's not Christopher Sanchez, I'm just going to say most of this range I really don't want to begin with.
What?
But if I do, I'm going to take a chance on the old man. Charlie Morton. I just like old reliable ratios. You just know what you're going to get. He's going to throw you five or six innings, give up three or four runs, and get you at least a K per inning. That's what he does. So if your ratios are okay, then this is a guy you want. 163 or more innings in three straight years. It's worn down about 10 innings a year since he's gotten older, so maybe 150, which is still pretty good in this range. Last year at a 3.64 ERA, which is pretty solid, but it's the strikeouts. We talked about 183 last year, 205, 216 in the last three seasons. That's elite. That is absolutely outstanding, at least elite when it comes to an ADP over 200. Let's put it that way. So I love Charlie Morton for that regard, but as a whole, pretty much not in this range for me.
That's a shame, man. This range is legit. All right, Nick Liddell. I know we're only supposed to pick one, but I got to do my
other boy,
Lodolo, man. I don't think I've left the draft this year, and I've done like more than I'd like to admit. Not quite at your level, but
no. I wrote down how many I was in for a podcast tomorrow, and yeah, you're not at that level.
we're double digits, aren't we?
Oh, we're at 15, my friend.
Good. curse word usually follows that, but we'll keep it clean. Nick Lodolo, like I think the marketplace is like dinging him way too hard for 34 innings last year of bad surface stats. The actual underlying skills for Lodolo were even better. He had more missed bats. He threw more strikes, fewer walks, just got destroyed by homers and BABIP. And yes, you can say like Great American Small Park, this and that. It's not going to be a 27% homer to fly. That is absurd. Nick Lodolo, yes, I wouldn't even say injury risk. There's more like workload risk. He's only got 134 innings over the last two seasons combined.
That was my question for you. Like, what would you say goes to make it worth it for you?
But honestly, man, like, so if he goes, what's he projected for? What do we have on the thing?
111.
Say he goes 130. I don't think that's out of the question at all.
So you think he gets a 100 inning bump from last year?
Yeah, I do. Because it wasn't an arm injury. It was a leg injury. And I get it. Injury is an injury. But threw 100 the year before. Like, I think that's, I don't know, I think that's reasonable to expect. The biggest thing with Lodolo, I think those innings are going to be high quality, though. So say it's only 100 innings. You get 100 quality innings out of your pick 250. It's a lot better than trying to get some of these guys even later that just nuke your ratios. So I like Sanchez more than Lodolo, but I really like Lodolo.
And Gialdi says in the chat, roster resource has Lodolo in AAA to start the year.
Whew. Hey, that's good. That will only make him cheaper.
All right, 251 to 261. We got Kenta Maeda, Taj Bradley, Nestor Cortez, Cutter Crawford, and Seth Lugo. You like this side of the board, Bloom. So who we got this time?
I'll go Cutter Crawford.
That's the one.
That's the one for sure. I'll go back to these metrics all the time, but 34% ball rate for Cutter Crawford. Again, league average on that, 36%. He throws strikes, misses a ton of bats, 14% swinging strike last year. The big thing, too, it's all fastball base. It's a four-seamer and a cutter that miss a ton of bats, and he can do it against lefties and righties. So I think there's like a decent floor. But then Cutter Crawford introduced a sweeper last year, only threw it like 7% of the time, but it got a ton of whiffs. That's what Cutter Crawford has been lacking, is kind of that put away secondary pitch. I think the sweeper can evolve into that. We saw Nick Pivetta on the same staff, what he could do with that pitch last year. So that's why I think like there's an even higher level for Cutter Crawford here, with a floor that like I feel is pretty safe. Like I think Crawford is pretty entrenched in that rotation, and I like guys who can miss bats with their fastball. Just everything works off of that. So I'm at a 260 ADP, big fan of Cutter.
Yeah, I love Cutter. I think that would be my pick here. I will throw, if you want to talk about maybe a bounce back in Nestor Cortez, is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Just because looking at, like, he was injured off and on last year, so some of his stats may look a little wonky. Obviously, the 4.97 ERA. He does have a 3.71 xERA, a 4.34 Sierra, so a little better than that. But the kind of things that stand out to me, the 1.56 home run, 9, like, blew up last year. He had a 291 BABIP after 232 and 265. Like, that was massive. And a left on base rate of only 69% after back-to-back years in the 80s. Like, just normal regression would have him coming back to a much better ratio guy. And the thing I really like to see, strikeouts were still there. 25.2% K rate after 26.5, 27.5. So he had a 17.7% K to walk, which was a little worse than back-to-back 20-plus percent K to walk seasons. So he's not that far off, what I'm trying to say, from kind of returning at least closer to what we're used to with Nestor. His fly ball rose to 57%, so that obviously helped with the home run boost. If that kind of regret, like, he just has a bunch of things that stood out that were not normal from years past, that, you know, battling a back injury, maybe he was leaving the ball higher in the zone. There's a lot of things that could be taking place that he was a guy we were drafting a lot earlier in the past because he put up back-to-back really good seasons. So if you want to look at a potential bounce-back guy, like we talked about Jose Berríos last year, not saying he's going to make that kind of jump, Nestor wouldn't surprise me. So I will mention Nestor Cortes right there.
Final honorable mention to Kenta Maeda. Similar to Lodolo, like there's volume issues there, but the per inning with Maeda, even though he had a 4.23 ERA last year, he's good. He's good. I feel like Detroit will let him go five while he's healthy.
That's the question. Like, he is very good. It's just, what do we get out of him is the million-dollar question with Kenta Maeda.
And even that, like, Detroit's bullpen might be pretty awful this year. So if Maeda fives and dives, like, those boys, there'll be some runs left in the sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth.
Yeah, not looking good. If you're a gambling man, play Detroit first fives on Maeda days. That's what I'd recommend. The last set on this grouping here, ADP 263 to 276, you got Emmett Sheehan, John Means, Kyle Harrison, Marcus Stroman, Griffin Canning. Who do you got here?
Gotta go Canning. Canning showed up on my page, on my three types of strikes bloom board earlier today. I feel like getting a lot of hype, but apparently not, because 276 ADP is damn cheap. So you're hoping that the health is the question for Griffin Canning. 63 innings in 2021, didn't even pitch in 22, but then at 130 innings. That goes back to your Nick Lodolo comment, man. We had a 130 inning increase from Griffin Canning last year. Canning can do it, Lodolo can do it. I understand, like, yeah, you're taking some volume risk, but age 28, Griffin Canning is he checks all the boxes for me.
Yep. Big end game target for me in Fab Leagues. This is obviously DC ADP, but I like taking a chance on a Griffin Canning late, because if he pans out, that's a heck of a pick. If not, he's an easy drop. Like, he's one of those guys I'm a fan of late in drafts, so I'm with you there. I will just mention, I guess you can call me Homer if you want. If you're a risky drafter, Kyle Harrison's interesting, just because we saw some really good starts. We saw some rough starts, kind of what I'd expect from a young pitcher. The control overall improved as the season went on. That was a big thing for me. And there's a ton of discussion and hype coming out of Giants camp. And it should be. They should be trying to hype him up. I get it. It's all talk right now. We're going to hear a lot of that going forward. So you guys can say whatever you want about me. That's fine. But the skills are there for elite strikeout stuff. It's just a matter of what else can go with it. So if you're a drafter that likes to take some upside risk, like, honestly, I will agree with you that Lodolo is a better pitcher. I wouldn't be surprised if their stat lines are far off.
Okay. I like it.
I think that's an interesting one. So that's an intriguing option there.
Hey, congrats on Soler, by the way. Should have mentioned that at the top.
Never thought I'd be so excited for 3 years, $42 million on anybody, but being the Giants offseasons the way they are, pumped on that one.
Yep.
A legit guy that can hit 30 home runs in our lineup. It's been a long time since that's happened. So pretty happy about that. A lot of 3-2 Giants losses coming up because two-run homer by Soler. Couple messages here in the chat. THP Knob says Bryce Miller, Yu Darvish, Reed Detmers, and maybe Taj Bradley in terms of the names I probably enjoy the most on ADP here. Almost also mentions Emmett Sheehan. Eric Halterman says almost nobody projects for high innings pitch in this range anyways. That is true. Very true. And it gets worse.
I have a question. That's a really good observation by Eric. There are kind of random guys like Marcus Stroman. Yep. Giolito, I would say, is a volume guy. Like, how do you Erod, although I guess Erod's not totally volume, but how do you, like, in terms of just the type of pitcher, do you try and balance some of these, like, injury workload but high skills versus because there's value in these volume guys that don't quite have the skills to be able to get 180 innings of like okay ratios. That's actually like useful. For me, it's a tough balance.
It's a very tough balance. Like in reality, I'm looking for guys that can go at least 150. So we talked about the Mariners boys. We're talking about Fought. Like even Charlie Morton fits that mold. Like that's kind of what I'm thinking. But to your point, like in this range, maybe we should be saying 130 is good. Like that could be fair. And in that regard, I just want a guy with high strikeout upside and then see where we can go from there. Like, because all of these guys are going to have very volatile ratios. Some of them will succeed in this range. A lot of these guys are going to blow up. That's just the way it is. That's why they're being down here. So they're going to be dropped anyways in reality of the situation. So it depends, I guess, on your risk reward. Like in a 12-team league, that's why Lodolo's fun there. Kyle Harrison's fun in 12 teams. Like those are the kind of guys you look at. First sign of a problem, they're gone. There's replacement value to be had. I guess in a 15, that's where I love like a Charlie Morton.
That's where it's that. That's the point I was going to make. In a 15, the replacement level for starting pitching is just so bad that like
I've had so many Charlie Mortons, you know, that 4.2 ERA, like 1.2 WHIP, but a million strikeouts. Like that's awesome.
And it's better than whoever you try and stream off Fab that week. Because
you basically take the hit at your ratios here. You just don't want a guy that's going to completely take you out behind the woodshed.
Yep.
And you just hope that you drafted like that's part of your early drafting. Like you need to. That's why you get an ace or two early. That's just kind of how the system works, because you know it breaks down the farther down the pipeline we go. So it's kind of part of putting the puzzle together that is a draft. All right, ADP 284 to 291. They're starting to get clumped together a little more, folks, as we get down the draft board here. You got Michael Wacha, Mackenzie Gore, Reese Olson, Chris Paddock. Man, he's back. And Andrew Abbott. A lot of red on this board, folks, but Ryan loves this board. So who do you like on this section?
Wait a minute. No, I like the last 15.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, this is starting to get sketchy, man. This is starting to get, like you said, a lot of red. This is where, but this is important to dive into. I mean, this is where hitting on, I listened to.
Real quick, let me comment on something before I forget it. Gialdi does say it's hard to start high ratio guys week in and week out just for Ks. Oh, I'm not starting them week out and week out. I'm taking chances on draft day knowing they can get high Ks and hoping they can figure their stuff out, basically. That's where that comes into play for me.
Listen to the RotoWire podcast this week with James Anderson and Phil Deseaux, and we're talking about like the advantage of drafting Ronald Acuna, like the built-in advantage of getting the first pick. And Phil made the, as he always does, the analytics based take that hitting on in last year was like a Justin Steele, those types of guys in this range. Hitting on one of these guys is just as important, gives you this, you know, same type of advantage as Ronald Acuna, taking him first at the draft price. So yes, there's a ton of red, but I'm telling you, man, by the end of the year, there's going to be three or four guys on this list that you're like, damn, that helped me win a league. So
no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Who are they? Hell, I don't know. But
I guess it's as good as mine.
But they're out there. We're just podcasters. We don't know. Did you already rattle off the first five? Yeah.
Wacha, Gore, Olson, Paddock, Abbott. Good luck.
Yeah, definitely not Abbott. I guess I'd go Mackenzie Gore. Just because
he showed some gains last year. Like if you really dig into him, he showed some big improvements, at least what I saw, that at least gives you optimism. Let's put it that way.
Started out hot with, near 30% K rate in the first half. Like the control's an issue, but the ball percentage for Gore says that like a 10% walk rate, your league average on that's 8%, could improve a little bit. Problem with Gore and tons of whiffs. Like I get it. He just breaks down. You need to see that full season. He did go 136 innings last year, but the second half was brutal. So I don't know. I'll go Gore. Chris Paddock's very interesting to me too, but I'll let you go.
I wasn't going to talk about Paddock, but what I'll say about Gore, he's went from 70 innings to 136. I'll take that. He's 24. He'll be 25 this year. Again, this whole area is about risk reward, like how red it is. Like you mentioned, there's like four guys that'll probably come out of the woodworks. Gore's on a bad team, which doesn't help, but strikeout wise, like, this is a big dude. So if he can get the whisk, continue that, increase the walk rate, like, make that better, there's at least an avenue for Mackenzie Gore to find success, where Walker is going to do Walker things, but he's never going to strike anybody out. So that's boring to me at this point in time. He's probably good in 15s, honestly, just because he'll like hang around for you, but don't go through that stress. You can pick him up on the waiver wire four different times throughout the year. But yeah, it's the one guy that I've been quasi interested in is Andrew Abbott.
Okay. So, cause he's the one I'm out on this group. So what's,
and it's only, and up? Again, I guess could be a flaw of mine, and people probably hate hearing it by now, but this is a dude that we saw, like, wasn't a massive strikeout guy, but we saw big strikeout games. But what I like the most about Andrew Abbott, and it could have been the Joy Luck Club, you know, 3.87 ERA, but a 4.56 xFIP, obviously pretty lucky. That's not ideal, but a 3.96 xCRA isn't bad. 4.33 Sierra, not horrible for this range. He did fine at home, which we don't see many people do in Great American Small Park. We pointed so many guys. He had a 3.51 home ERA, a 4.29 road ERA in 59 innings at home, 50 innings on the road. That just stood out like, wow. 11 homers on at home, 5 on the road. So he kind of at least limited the damage there. But we saw like Luoba was like just so much better at home, which was a big surprise in Great American Small Park. So Andrew Abbott is a guy that I think is at least interesting to me. He was on like one of the big prospect arms. Again, I'm not in love with this whole page, basically.
Yeah, I think you're rolling the dice, expecting that home success for Andrew.
But Abbott, even if it comes back to where the road was, but the road improves, like I'm saying, like there's an avenue to something here where you don't really have it with some of these other, like Reese Olson. He was a great story, but he pitches to so much contact and walks so many. It's like terrifying with Reese Olson. Gore's the dude in this whole range. Gore's the dude.
I think so too. I think Gore has the highest ceiling, so that's why I think Paddock's like he's just interesting to me, but more because of Minnesota. Like they just know what they're doing with pitchers, and I know like we say that about the Dodgers, and they've had several flubs recently. I know with Paddock, like he's only thrown 40 innings the last 2 years with Tommy John, but by all reports, like no one's really seen him pitch. But the velocity has been way up. And again, I just trust Minnesota. So like fully knowing Chris Paddock could get hurt the 30 innings and do nothing, you just drop him. There's at least a ceiling there. That's I think well above Waka, Olson or Abbott.
Yep. Daniela Colon says Michael Waka made an incredible performance and Abbott should put better numbers. That should be a goal. And then Eric Halterman again, scary low ground ball percentage for Abbott, but he didn't have one in the minors. That is true. And that's not good in Great American Small Park, obviously. So we'll see how that plays out long term. Your next pocket here, ADP 292 to 313. You got Edward Cabrera, Luis Severino, Lance Lynn, John Gray, Jameson Taillon. Let me guess, Lance Lynn.
No. What?
That was like sarcasm for you.
All right, good. Good. I had my screen on another tab, so I didn't see you, but that freaked me out. No, I'm not doing Lance Lynn. John Gray. John Gray is the easy call for me. For you. And I know you can kind of rinse, repeat. Like John Gray is really like, I don't want to say never been good. He had a good 2022. He's burned more than he's helped throughout his career. But I love these skills for John Gray. John Gray was on that trifecta of the three types of strikes tweet that I put out earlier today. And to be on that list at a 308 ADP is like, I think he's way too cheap. And there's not really that much. Like Gray threw 157 innings last year.
Like he finished in the bullpen, which probably scared people off, but that shouldn't matter. Like they need him to start until half their rotation comes back at the All-Star break.
Yep. And so like, and he should get plenty of run support there. Like, and it's easy to say like, oh, John Gray, you know, the skills have never kind of jived with the results, but all but two of his seasons have been in Coors. Like, I don't know, with Texas, he has like a 4.08 ERA over two seasons. Like it's not bad. Plus you get a good chunk of K's. I think the K rate that John Gray had last year is going to go up. So I really like John Gray here. I think he stands out well above Lance Lynn, which isn't saying much. I don't know how he's going after Lance Lynn in drafts. That's crazy to me.
Lance Lynn's fun. That's why we love the big man. But Two quick points. Edward Cabrera, if he could ever stop walking the farm, is far and away the guy here. Like, just talent-wise, far and away the guy here, in my opinion. It's just a matter of, can he stop walking the farm? So you can kind of take – he's probably worth the gamble, honestly, in a 12, but this late in the draft, very intriguing at this point in the draft. 15-teamers, just draft Jamison Tyon if you want a boring, consistent stat line. Otherwise, just leave him on the waiver wire because – he will, and he finished actually much stronger than his overall stat line points to. Jamison Tyon finished very strong. It's just a boring stat line. That's what it is, but it's like a little less than a K per nine. Ratios are usually pretty solid with Tyon. That's what he's going to get you. And that plays awesome in 15s. In 12s, leaves a little more meat on the bone for what you need. So something to consider there.
And something, I'm glad you bring Tyon up. And again, yeah, especially in like your deeper, your 15 team league, I think those are innings that you can count on. You mentioned he got better. Tyon did throughout the season. He was one of the higher strikeout minus walk gainers over the last 2 months of the season. And again, I kind of broken record, but this is my process. And there was a pitch mix change to support that. Tyon threw fewer sinkers, more cutters, basically. So I just think, yeah, he's kind of just a guy, but getting just a guy back here is a lot better than trying to stream in your deeper league. So
yeah, your deeper leagues don't like Tyon quite a bit. Like even, well, we won't get into it. If you're playing in an auction league, just throwing it out there. Tyon could be interesting. The next pocket here, I actually like a couple of these guys. 316 to 337. You got Sean Manaea, Louis Varland, Frankie Montas, Dean Kramer, Chase Silseth. Who do you like here, Ryan?
Silseth and Varland.
That's good too.
So Seth and Varland. Varland, I don't know. So there's risk he doesn't start in the rotation. I think he's tabbed as Minnesota's fifth
for now
starter at the moment. So there is that. Chase Silseth, I get there's some burnout risk there. Like he's 24, hasn't thrown more than 112 professional innings in a season. But from like a pure stuff, and if you're just shooting for the moon, at that age with the strikeout skills that Chase Silseth has, I think Chase Silseth is a fantastic dart throw. Growth stock flyer is what we ended Silseth's box in with the forecaster. So I like Silseth quite a bit too.
Yep. I like both of those quite a bit in this range. Kramer's boring, but another 15 guy, if you need him, like he puts innings out there. Tyon's better, but Kramer's a 15 dude for me. I think Sean Manaea is interesting. And that takes a lot.
You're coming around. You didn't like this guy.
Yeah, I even said it in our recap show. I said it because I got stuck watching him a lot this last year. And most of the veteran pitchers hated the way Gabe Kapler ran that rotation because he never even knew what day you were pitching. Like if you played DraftKings like I did, it'd be like, okay, someone's going to open for Manaea. But I didn't even pitch that day. He ended up pitching the next day. Like those guys hated it. They hated openers. They hated the uncertainty. That uncertainty kind of went out the window as the season went on just because of injuries, which is funny how that works. And you look at Manaea's last, like just the second half alone, 3.43 ERA compared to 5.49. In August, he had a 3.15 ERA. And then 27 September, October innings, 2.67 ERA. So we saw some massive improvements from Manaea in that regard. And his velo looked good as the end of the season, obviously, because he wasn't probably pitching as deep in the first half. But he had a better K percentage in the first half, I'll say that much, which is kind of surprising because that's not the way I remembered it watching him pitch. But he just looked like the more complete pitcher. He was going deeper into games. He was giving Giants chances to win. Now he's going to go to the Mets with a kind of full bore. He's not going to have an opener for him. I think at this point in the draft, it's kind of an intriguing upside play at that point with Sean Manaea.
Agreed. Quick chat comment from the Knob, THP Knob. About Silseth, wide arsenal for Silseth. I can see some world with like average ratios in 140, 150 innings. Yeah, it's just all about that walk rate. Hopefully he doesn't take a page out of teammate Patrick Sandoval's book. 12% of the batters.
Well, if he takes Sandoval, it's better than Jose Suarez.
too soon.
Yeah, I had a lot of Suarez.
Did you see Suarez in arbitration? He got like almost $1 million.
We should be getting paid at least a couple hundred thousand then at that pace.
$1 million for what he did last year.
That must be good. Must be good to be. That's why if you're a lefty, kids, I should have just kept pitching. You know, they'll take you. They're desperate.
We're both lefties.
Yeah. See, there you go. We should have done it. Instead, we try to play golf. ADP 342 to 357. You got Trevor Rogers, Ranger Suarez, Logan Allen, Steven Matz, Andrew Heaney. Talk about lefties, the entire range right here. Left-handed pitching.
Yeah, you're right. I don't really like any of them, though. Kind of like maybe Matt's, maybe Trevor Rogers. If Trevor Rogers is healthy, I have not really heard a peep about Trevor Rogers' health status. Somewhere within the corpse of Trevor Rogers is a good pitcher. We saw it 2 years ago. So there's at least that. And he's still young enough where he can get back to that, health permitting. So I guess Rogers, but this is where it really starts to fall apart, man.
I do like the Mats call. I was one guy that was starting to really figure it out before his injury last year. So yep. I think there's something there at this point in the draft. Again, we're talking ADP. We're on past 350 now. Like, literally, no one's going to be surprised if this fails at this point. These are your last picks in a fab league. So I do like the upside of Mats. We've been talking some young pitchers. Logan Allen is a guy that's interesting just because he's on that Cleveland staff. He had whip issues last year. That was his biggest thing, was the whip issues, but he also has strikeout ability. So if he can somehow find it out, he's interesting. Might be better for the waiver wire, but someone to keep an eye on, Logan Allen.
One, we'll say this one. Sorry, go ahead.
No, if you have more on this range, then I had something to segue. But
I just had a random. No, go segue.
Okay. Well, before we started the show, everybody, Ryan said there's one guy he really likes on this last page. We have 10 names left, and I guessed one of these 10. I don't know if it's the right one, but I'm really intrigued to see who the one guy is that Ryan, like, unless we've already passed it, he didn't announce it to the world.
Nope.
But in this next range from 359 to 369, we have Clark Schmidt, Alek Manoah, Dane Dunning, Zach Lytle, and Tyler Wells. Who do you like here?
D, none of the above.
Oh, so it's in the final five. Oh, my. So none. So we're going to move on from there. Perfect.
I mean, I'm not just going to sit here and try and make up a reason to try and like these guys.
I'll say Tyler Wells. I love what he did. I just wish they'd keep him in the bullpen, but then they went and signed Craig Kimbrel. I'm kind of ruined that dream. But Tyler Wells showed some outs. He was actually pitching really well until he got tired. They sent him down. He came back and pitched in the bullpen, pitched really well there. So Tyler Wells is a dude that I got circled.
I think he like led the majors in whip for a while last year.
Yeah. He pitched really well. He flat out burned out. Like he passed the innings expectation, but the team was so good they needed him, so they sent him down just to chill, like throw a couple innings here and there, then brought him back in the bullpen where he was a high leverage reliever for them in the postseason. Like, he was very good. So Tyler Wells would be a guy for me.
A lot of these guys are matchup based too, and that's what I was gonna raise earlier. This just like entered my brain. From a strategy standpoint, I'm sure there will be articles about this as we get closer to opening day, and it's probably still too early in draft season to think about this, but so season starts on Thursday. So a lot of these number four, number five guys may be in for two start weeks in that first full week of the season. So you may want to look at the schedule for that first full week and kind of see, like, maybe Steven Matz get some kind of, I don't know the schedule off the top of my head. I'm not there yet. I'm just saying that's something to think about with some of these later guys, to draft them for that first two-step and from there.
I do that every year, like, especially in the OCs, because it's easy drops, easy replacements.
Yep.
I remember having a lot of Michael Wacha because he had two really good starts to start the year. See ya, buddy. And it actually worked out. It doesn't work out all the time.
I did that same year, and he pitched well. I held him and actually held him a lot longer than I thought I would. And did pretty well, so I don't know. Yeah, there's that.
They are options. It's a good call on your part. Well, the final range here is JP. It's from 376 to 399. JP Sears, Jack Flaherty, Graham Ashcraft, Bryce Elder, Josiah Gray. In the chat, THP Knob and Gialdi both said Ashcraft. Is it Graham Ashcraft?
When was the last time Gialdi and I agreed on a player?
Is this the first?
No. It's not.
Okay. I was really looking forward to you explaining to me why Graham Ashcraft was the next best.
For me, it's the captain Jack Flaherty.
Wow,
I'm a fan. Okay. I'm a fan this year. Again, at the price 3.9. What the hell is he? 381. So I'll lay out the case for Jack Flaherty. Yes. Like, he has not been good for quite a while. The ratios last year, not great at all. Jack Flaherty, however, in season last year, had one of the highest velocity upticks. As I try and make the case, and the chats, we got good God and holy hell in the chat. So that's That's good. You guys are ready for the labor stream next Tuesday. You can tell.
Two back in, 8 Eastern, everybody.
When I draft Jack Flaherty in labor, this will all come back. One of the bigger in-season velocity bumps of any pitcher had a second half velocity higher than his first half velocity. Walk rate went way down from 12% down to 7% first to second half. Strikeout rate went up. A lot more swinging strikes first to second half. If that second half skill and velocity hold, and it's not like unreasonable to think that Jack Flaherty has been good before. It's been a while, but he has been good before. I think there's an avenue. I think there's an avenue for Jack Flaherty to be acceptable, and that's what you want this late.
I'm not going to tell you you're wrong, because I was dropping and adding Jack Flaherty a ton last year, like on the waiver wire, because I was seeing what you're talking about. Let's put it that way. It never came to fruition. Going to Detroit with no pressure on him. Yeah. Great place to be. I'm not going to say you're wrong.
I didn't even mention that. Yeah, he's got
no pressure.
Plenty of run in Detroit.
Literally, go figure good it park. Out. Kid. Yeah, better team than usual in Detroit. Yep. AL Central.
That division. Come on, here we go, man.
We'll see. I'm here to help. Here to help. This is not what you'll get on the labor feed, everybody, but this is what we do once in a while. So we'll see how that works. Eric Halterman does have a good question here. Any reason to care about Sears having the highest innings projected on this page? He threw 172 last year, and the A's have no reason to change that this year. So he should throw a ton of innings, and he was a very good streaming option throughout the season. Most of those A's were Walichuk. He won't be there this year, honestly, but that was a dude Ryan used a lot. There is a ton of that in this range with the A's pitchers, I should say.
Yep, and I think Sears. Yeah, I think if he's at home against a soft opponent, I think he's usable there. I think for like a full season, you're not, the ratios would be okay. You get some K's. You're not going to get any wins in Oakland. He's certainly usable.
The chat is just loving this Flaherty discussion. It's wild.
What else we got in here? Daniela says, what's going to change now? And he's worse. He's in the Tigers.
Honestly, being in Detroit is a bonus. That
there you go.
Won't hit. It's just fun. This is what I love. Building the puzzle here. Good stuff. So there you go. We got through about 100 or so. We'll do the listener questions. First off, final thoughts on the starting pitching position, especially this back end that we just discussed.
I think some of my final thoughts are going to come from listener questions, so I'll hold it. Not really. I mean, I mentioned that at the top, those few kind of multiple round pockets, I don't like pitchers. Just plan for that. Know where to take your bats. Do that for every position, really, or even if you want to do it by category. I think, and I mentioned this a little bit last week, someone asked about like all the different metrics and stats out there for starting pitcher analysis, and I just think you're better served trusting a lot of the projections and maybe the stuff we even say, and going at more of the macro level, how you want to map out your team from a draft strategy standpoint. And we'll go into that even more upcoming on these ADP Pocket episodes.
For sure. All right, we'll do the discussions in the chat first, and I'll get you guys Twitter listener questions as well. Daniela mentioned earlier predictions on Blake Snell. Obviously, we don't know where he's signing yet, but are we going to say he's going back to few innings, or do we think he continues the roller coaster of a great season?
Continues the roller coaster. I think I mentioned a couple episodes ago, the last time Blake Snell won his Cy Young, the following year, it was like a 4.30 ERA, something like that. I think you're coming back. Maybe not that bad for Snell. But I also made the point from a fantasy standpoint, if you have strikeouts as a category, most fantasy leagues do, or at least points or whatever.
Snell's
like
big.
Blake Snell can have okay ratios and still be really good, especially if he signs on a good team. Just the strikeouts are so valuable. I think we often overlook that. And you can, just from a team build standpoint, you can pair Snell with some of these Logan Webbs, George Kirby, those types of kind of whip ratio guys that aren't high strikeouts. So you can piece, a rotation together around Blake Snell.
100%. Any chance you can pull that first board up from tonight with Brandon Wu and company?
Oh, man. Look at this on the fly requests. Yep.
Let's see. This is why. That's why we're teammates.
You don't pay me enough for this, man.
Yeah. Sorry. High noons are on the way. Gialdi has a question here. Which of the guys on the screen is the most likely to be part of pitcher preview part one next year? So one, we'll say 1 through 30, even though we went 1 through 20, but 1 through 30. Who, any of these guys make it there?
Who has the best chance? I would say Yu Darvish, but he'll be 38 years old next year, so I can't go there.
There's a few.
Do you have somebody? Fought probably.
Fought is one. I think Brian Wu and Bryce Miller are kind of easy ones, but I'd say Fought. And the more I like, we talked about it, and I thought about it, Nestor Cortez could make that run.
Okay, I'll make the case for Taj Bradley. I know we kind of skipped over him, but just think the combination of being on the Rays and what Bradley can do from a pure stuff standpoint, if he regains that fastball command, I could see that. Notice I did not say Christopher Sanchez.
Yep.
Because I don't think like the elite ceiling is there, just from a strikeout standpoint. So I will admit that.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Daniela asked if we could give her feedback on a mock draft. If you want to hit me up on Twitter, I will help you there. A lot easier there. Yep, a lot easier there than on the show.
Yep, so, yeah. Let us know for sure.
Yeah, a lot easier in that regard. A few others here. I think we got actually most of them because they actually started just making fun of.
Yeah, it's mostly just people making fun of Jack Flaherty and me.
So. Which is fair. She asks, Flaherty is quite a pick, Ryan. Should I draft him? I think I should stay in the San Diego or go to SF with Bob Melvin. Yes, Blake Snell should. That is a good call. All right. We got Twitter listener questions now. You guys came through as usual, which is absolutely amazing. And we'll start with Drew Forte, our buddy who won the OC overall. Just said John Gray all with an exclamation mark. So he's with you, Ryan, on John Gray.
Hey,
on
to get support from an overall winner, $6-figure prize. I'll take that.
Dollar bills, y'all. First World Problem says, are you buying those projections on Nestor per inning? These look legit. I do. I said, I think he could be better. I think we saw enough to show that like, the injury impacted a lot, but the fact the strikeouts were still there, I was pretty optimistic on.
Agreed. And I think, I'll project, I think the 129 is a hedge between, this is the problem with projections. You look at a number, I think it's either going to be like 60 or 80, which is what he did last year, or it's going to be 160, which is what he did the year before. And this is just an average of those two outcomes. So, health at your own risk, but I agree with everything else you said there.
And then he also says, have the Giants said Harrison for sure will be in the rotation? They have pointed every finger to, unless something crazy happens, he will be in the rotation. They want him there to start the season. Taylor Johnson says, what pitcher is going after pick 500?
Oh,
do you feel could be valuable targets in draft and hold leagues? All right, let me pull up. Whew, I got to update my fab sheet here to 213.
Your boy.
Which one?
Where's he at? Robert Gasser's at 468 over the. Actually, no, he might be. Let me. He might be later than 500.
I'm going to 500 now. Here we go. All right, let's have some fun.
Robert Gasser, even though he doesn't qualify. I will also go, Bubba, while you kind of look. And actually, Robert Gasser, the last few weeks, ADP is 433. So I really, really cheated there. One name who I'm going with at an ADP of 550, more of a second half play, but you need to kind of stagger these guys because you know guys are going to get hurt throughout the season, is Christian Scott of the Mets. I think, I trust the prospect evaluations on Scott, which are all pretty glowing. And I do think, given the fragility of the Mets rotation, that Scott will get a shot at some point midway through the season. So I think Christian Scott is someone who could be effective in the second half for you.
Yeah, the guy I wanted to pick has moved up to 441, so that sucks. I'm not going to go there then.
It's tough down here, man.
Yeah, I'm looking at I usually take all like relievers at this point. I don't take a ton of pitcher like starting pitchers unless you're taking darts like Ryan. It is saying
490 ADP. I would from a reliever standpoint try Chris Martin. I actually took him in a fab league that I drafted on Saturday night, the Werf League, the Western Expanse Roto Fantasy League. Took him, I think, like the 29th round. If Kenley Jansen gets traded, Chris Martin might be the guy in Boston. If not, you cut and move on.
I think the my boy comment was probably Luis Medina, but
no, I was Gasser.
Yeah, the guy I'm going to mention, he's got an ADP of 441, so I'm kind of cheating. But for the A's is Joe Boyle. This one, my eyes got open to him when I talked to Jake Crumpler previewing the A's. Between Double A, because he got traded over from Cincinnati this last year, from Double A and Triple A, he threw 101, about 100, almost 40 innings last year. Dude throws gas, tons of strikeouts, like big boy stuff, and he's scheduled to be in the rotation for the A's. So that's kind of a fun one if you want to take a dart throw on that one.
Let me just add Michael Grove, just from a skills flyer standpoint, 601 ADP, and then never mind. totally lost where I was. The other name was a good name, dude. Oh, your boy Robbie Ray, second half.
I don't even count, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him until August or September, probably.
That's fine. If you get 2 months of Robbie Ray,
okay. Him or Lance McCullers?
Probably McCullers.
Yeah, McCullers is going past 500, so there you go. Tuvia says, would love to hear your thoughts on two guys, Casey Mize and Eric Fede. Would you take a late-round flyer on either? Thanks, guys. Love the pod. Real quick, I'm really out on Casey Mize until I can see something productive from him. Fede is interesting. Will the translation from Korea be immediate? We don't see it all the time. We have seen it, but that's a big question. Pitching for the White Sox might help, but if you want to take a flyer on Fede, I won't tell you you're wrong, but I'm just probably out on both. What about you?
I think I'd go Eric Fede as well. We saw the Merrill Kelly and the Miles Michaelis post Japan turnaround, so maybe there's something there. I know these guys are super deep, so I take a shot there. He did. I don't know exactly what the changes were, but there were some like arsenal changes.
I believe he added a new pitch.
I think it was something like that. I don't want to get it wrong, but there was definitely something.
Yep, strikeouts went through the roof compared to what we were used to in the States. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So take that with a grain of salt, but yeah.
All right, Michael Cicchini says, it feels like Darvish is a worthy bounce back ? I think so, personally, but it's risky, but I think so.
Who is it?
You, Darvish. Do you think he's worthy?
Yeah. I mean, there's huge bounce back potential. Yeah. It's just you got to weigh the floor.
And then favorite recently injured guy you take a shot on? Lodolo, Montas, Paddock, or Mats?
I mean, you know
your answer.
What's your answer? Well, you're not sold. I did not sell you on Lodolo.
I would take Lodolo. Like he's got the ceiling over them. Yeah,
he's going earlier than all those other guys. Yeah.
So for me, it'd probably be Steven Matz if I do the last three. Matz.
I think I'd agree with that.
Calling my shot says, when taking shots on reserve starting pitchers in a 15 teamer, what type of profile you're looking for?
Yeah,
kind of mentioned it with like Charlie Morton and Jameson Taillon, just like great floor guys that. I shouldn't kill you, but just because replacement value is so difficult.
Yeah, and actually, I'll mention this in labor, I'm sure, but especially in like 15 team leagues, I am drafting. And I said this last year. I am drafting more starting. I'm drafting bench starting pitchers before I have even filled out my hitter roster, because I know just the way I play. In fab leagues, I'm going to be streaming probably my churning those last two or three hitters, maybe not every week, but a lot of weeks. And I'd rather, I think Kurland has said this, right? Stream from your bench for starting pitchers. 100%. I think you need to stockpile a mix of like ceiling and maybe volume guys, but you need to have more pitching than you think. You just, the last few years trying to stream starting pitching has just been terrible. So I like to get probably 11 pitchers on my team before I have even filled out my hitters, because I know I'm going to churn those last few hitter spots, and I know I want to stream for my bench for pitchers. So just general stuff there.
For sure. Like a good streaming pitcher in a 15 we didn't talk about today is Kyle Gibson. He's annoying as hell, but he's one of those guys that you just stream. He was one of the names Curlin and I talked about when Curlin started coming out with that term. So that's the kind of profile, annoying, yet like Giolito wouldn't shock me if he's a streamable pitcher, like once in a while off the bench. It's annoying, but it wouldn't surprise me. Okay. Gerald Points says, odds of Lodolo and Pascantino earning double-digit money this year.
I think I feel very confident Vinny will, actually.
Yes, agreed.
Lodolo. Double digits tough because you need wins. You need them to go. You need making, the volume, too, to get double digits.
Plant your flag, big man. Plant your flag.
Plant my flag. Double digits dollars from a 250 pick? I mean, that's no doubt
asking a lot.
Sanchez. But
it's asking a lot.
Lodolo needs, like, you need, like, 130, 140 innings with some wins there. So, Vinny, I'm pretty confident.
All right. Andy Splinter asks, better bang for your buck, Yamamoto at ADP 50 or Shota Umaga at ADP 200? Shota looked great in the WBC and had a better K to walk last year in the MPB. I'll take Shota 150 picks later.
Agreed. Just the opportunity cost of, like, the other pitchers going around Yamamoto, I really like. And so I'd take one of those other pitchers and then just take a shot at 200 ADP, Shota Imanaga.
Yep, with you on that one. And one last question in the chat so we can smash all this. GLD asks, are either of you doing the Champions League? No, I'm not.
Not this year for me. Nope. Yeah.
I don't play in mains, so not really going to work out for me. But thanks for asking. Final thoughts, Ryan, as we wrap up the starting pitching position, relief pitchers on Thursday.
Oh, man, I got to start do my post-show tradition of bolding names on my sheet that we've talked about just now before I forget it all. So, no, I thought we covered it pretty, like, a good mix of, I hope, of going somewhat deep into guys, but also keeping it kind of macro level and seeing general pockets where we like. So, relievers on Thursday.
Whew. Yep. See if we can have a second straight year of, like, all these guys keeping their jobs. It'll be so much fun. We speculated in recent years about who's next. Didn't need it as much last year, so I can't wait to be wrong this year. It'll be awesome. But we'll be back with you guys on that one. Again, thank you all for the questions. Thanks for hanging out in the chat tonight. It was a fun one talking SPs with you. And until next time, you can find Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intrick, and this is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 107. Catch y'all next time.